fast racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 25 to top of the hour, and hearing the ExpressBet ad makes me think to catch everybody up the last couple of weeks, winners in Fun in the Sun. Last week, Allison Halbig, she took down the top prize, $5,000, and it was a tight pack, actually, top to bottom, top four finishers. Ray Poole was just $15 behind for $2,000. Joe Finley. Another $5 behind that for $1,000. And Vince DiPaolo was fourth. And the week before, and Johnny, obviously, and I will catch up on a lot of this and the seasonal standings and things, but Howard Bolte with a big win. Big total, $360 mutual pool total. And he wins the $5,000. Good job. Darlene Wolfson was second for $2,000, $342. And our friend Paul Weezer. Paul, perennial NHC participant and top level player. He was third for $1,000.
And so far, the seasonal standings, a quick glance going into, call it the second half of the season. Paul is actually sitting second, but Lucas Peltz, almost $1,100, $1,095 in total winnings. Paul second with 963, and Jose Suarez third, going for the seasonal prize. Very cool. $8,500 every week, and 3 weeks remain. And we'll catch up with Johnny on Monday. Right now, Steve Haskin standing by, and he joins us as we move toward the biggest couple of three-year-old races on the calendar for Saratoga, Alabama for the Phillies on Saturday, and nice field at nine. And Travers continues to track toward a terrific matchup, even with a couple of participants not going to be involved, like War of Will. We're still waiting for Maximum Security to make a decision. Jason Service monitoring the Haskell winner, see if he's going to participate. Steve Haskin has been up to Saratoga and was nice enough to come out with Joan and the Friedbergs on Sunday. First time that the Haskins have visited the homestead here in Greenwich. And now Steve knows where it all happens, how it all comes together from my broadcast position here in my office. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Have you been away?
Yeah, I was away. I was away.
Yes, I know exactly where you sit now in your 1848 home.
Well, it's funny because Tina
said, "Beautiful home, I might add."
Thank you.
Beautiful. Anybody looking for Steve's house? By the way, it's a beautiful, like lime green with dark green shutters. It makes you feel like you're right back in the colonial days. It was beautiful backyard with bird feeders everywhere, and it's like a picnic area back there.
It is. Tina's turned it into almost a campground. it wouldn't take much to I don't know what else she can do back here, but she's been a buzz of activity, you know, all summer. Without her working at the racetrack, she's cultivated the lawn and all the garden stuff, and
she takes good care of you with an iron hand.
Yes, she's been she's been watching over me, and I didn't make it all that easy. The first couple of days, I'd say the first, you know, once the anesthesia part kind of wore off, and you know, when you're really kind of groggy and out of it, but then, you know, getting used to laying there, I'm. You know, I'm a fairly active type of a person, and so to have to lie on your side for hours on end, it was just not really made for that. So it was a challenge.
Don't look at me. I do it all the time. But it's funny, you know. Us males, you know, need to be taken care of, and you know, I'm sure at some point you might have been looking, you know, that Derby Barbie, you turning into Nurse Ratched or something, you know.
Well, I called her that. I specifically, it took me about 2 days to refer to her as Nurse Ratched and me as McMurphy. Absolutely. That's the kind of relationship. After a while, I sort of, you know, you begin to, it's interesting how much your body, you know. And Johnny, I had a couple different people, you know, write to me early on and saying, you know, don't try to do too much, and don't try to, you know, come back too soon and all that kind of stuff. And at first I didn't really, you know, understand the suggestions I hadn't connected the dots anyway. And it only took maybe 3 or 4 days where I realized, you know, when you try to get up and you know, try to resume some activities, and then immediately just be knocked over by how exhausted you were. And Steve, you had a serious illness a couple of years ago. I mean, different kind of thing. And Johnny in particular, Johnny DeSantis explained to me, you know, Johnny had the beginning of the year, he had a tough situation. And he said your body will tell you that it needs that time to, like when you sleep, it's repairing itself. And I kind of came to understand that over these 2 weeks.
Yeah, when I had my thing, I had when I was in the hospital, I couldn't even have a drink of water for 8 days. No food, no water for eight days.
Wow. So intravenous feeding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then once in a while they'd let me suck on an ice cube, which and then I tell you, one of the greatest things I've ever eaten in my life, by the way, is after 8 days, they gave me Jell-O. Oh, my God, it's the greatest thing I've ever tasted in my life.
That's great. Well, that's
just,
the one.
Yeah, Steve, you just came back like you didn't miss a beat.
No.
I don't know what was more detached, your retina or you from your audience. You know, I mean,
that's a good line.
I mean, it's like a caffeine addict having to give up their 9 o'clock coffee every morning.
Well, we try to keep everybody entertained, and I want to thank Joanne did a great job, just putting together some shows that filled in. And you know, for the people, I received a couple of notes, saying, well, why can't you have somebody fill in? It's not exactly that easy to figure.
I remember one time, but I don't know if you remember this, but. When you were doing your show at the barbecue,
yeah,
and you had Jorge Velasquez on, and you just got up and left and left the show to me, and I said, whoa, and all of a sudden I'm trying to think of every horse that Jorge Velasquez rode, trying to bring up Late Bloomer and all these old kind of horses, and talking about Alizar. You know, and it's like, I'm on the verge of a hum and a hair, and I'm saying, wait, how do you keep talking all that? And so I got a little taste of that being thrown into the fire. So, you know what, it's something that comes natural. I mean, it's obviously natural for you to be able to just get on there and talk. And, you know, listen, I listen to radio all my life, so people just have a knack for doing that.
Well, it
you know, it occurred... I got a little bit of a knack. You know, when we did that show for a couple of years, I started getting the hang of it.
Now, I had plenty of people, you know, say if there's anything they could do, and you know, part of it is the equipment, and part of it also is, you know, Casey's back today too. But
it was so great hearing his voice.
Well, we're going to talk in a minute, in a little bit. Casey and I are going to get Casey on the mic, but I didn't know how to even execute, having somebody. That there was the week that I missed when my mother died 10 years ago, and
right.
that anniversary is coming up next week. And Seth Merrow, even now, Seth couldn't. You know, Seth is always my first choice, but he has a morning show now himself. Back then, he only had afternoon coverage, so Seth stepped in and he handled the show for. For that week that I was out. It's just a tough situation. And to ask somebody to come in and for 3 hours,
you have to keep talking too. You can't all of a sudden stop and saying all of a sudden, like there were no thoughts in my mind. I what am I talking about now? And then you start going with and then you can't do that. You have to be smooth and you have to keep going. And it helps to know every little thing about every aspect of horse racing, which not many people can do other than you.
Well, it's very kind. There is so much.
If you told me, you can have the president of AMTOAD on, I'd say, oh, really? don't know what to talk about.
No, there's so much. And I've got a stack of stuff here to get to. A lot of it will have to wait till next week. There was the Jockey Club Roundtable the other morning, of course. And we got sales coverage next week. Sid and I will go over some of the results. Very good pair of sales. The open sale was outstanding, led by Curlin. Curlin had as remarkable a night. Holy, just tremendous. Tremendous.
I got to tell you, going out in the morning, because I was there for quite a few days already at Saratoga, and going out in the morning, one of the highlights every morning was talking to Larry Best, who's like one of the owners. He's out there at 5:30 in the morning, almost every morning, and we got into long conversations just about racing. And he's new to the game, and you can see he's willing to learn and absorb. And we talk about different things, and talking about about sales and what to look for. And then he goes out like the next day and pays $775,000 for a New York bred filly. It's just amazing. But I really like him a lot. I mean, he's down to earth and loves the game. Just loves coming out there. He's out there with his binoculars. And I told him, I said, I said, you got yourself a hell of a good trainer, because, I've known Don Chatlos for a lot of years, and Don Chatlos, he is a heck of a horseman. He knows how to train a horse, and he's got all these $1 million yearlings and $900,000 yearlings. And of course he's got Instagram and Roaten, it's great seeing them together. I mean, they look like they make a great pair. So, you never want to have things happen the way they did, those kind of circumstances. But I'm glad to see Don back training again. He did a phenomenal job, obviously, with Singletary winning the Breeders' Cup Mile.
Well, and Best himself helped drive the sale, the New York sale, the second day.
Oh, God, yes. 775, that'll drive it.
And he's so unorthodox. I had a fun conversation with him. I guess it must have been the Sunday, actually, the last day I was on the track, and ran into him as we were walking out, Tina and I. And, we kind of got a chance to just maybe 5 minutes. I said to him, I said, love to get you on maybe, around sale time. And he said, no, you can't talk to me during the sales. I'm too hyped up during the sales. But he had a funny quote about the Malibu Moon filly, where he said he almost didn't buy her thinking about a racing career. He said, my first thought about her is as a, being added to the broodmare band.
That's what we talked about.
It's so unusual, his thinking.
The resurgence of fillies at sales. Like, back in the day, fillies never came anywhere near the prices that the colts did. But as the years have gone by, they've gotten closer and closer and closer. And I explained to him, I said, look, if you're going to spend $1 million on a yearling, or $2 million, or whatever, you're buying all these into mischiefs, if that colt turns out to be a bust, you've got nothing. You don't have a stallion. Nobody's going to be interested. That horse is going to wind up standing in Kansas. Nobody's going to be interested. If you have a filly and she never gets to the races, or if she runs cheap, if she's got the pedigree, you can be able to breed her to anybody, and you can get any kind of horse. You can get a champion. So, I mean, it pays. If you're going to spend a lot of money, it pays, really, to buy a filly, because you're not dependent on their racing career as much as you are colts. And we were talking about that, and like the very next day, he went out and bought this filly. Obviously is his philosophy as well. But it makes sense when you think about it. I mean, how many of these million-dollar horses you never hear of? And what are you going to do with them? They're standing in Louisiana, they're standing in Washington or whatever. You've got to earn your place in the breeding shed, and that's what you're buying these colts for in the long run, is to make them into stallions. Because, listen, the vast majority of them do not turn into a grade one horses. Most of them get beat by the $80,000 yearlings. So it's very interesting to see the to see him pay that kind of money for a filly. And she and if you look at her pedigree, she had a very strong pedigree.
Oh, no doubt, and a nice, obviously a nice physical. I mean, you fold that in too.
Sure.
He's got a at this point. I mean, now a track record of finding a horse in short order and being moved by them and going ahead and just buying them, because he said he only really laid eyes on her a couple of hours before she was going to go through the ring.
Right. Well, sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah.
You know, somebody obviously had to point him out, you know, so he's obviously has people looking at these horses and giving him advice and making short lists.
We'll go through a lot of the sales results. I want to catch up with it next week when we talk to Sid. Steve, in the meantime, the visit overall and a couple of highlights to hit on before Lenny joins us. The Whitney win. I hit some of the racetrack outcomes in my absence to start the show, and a win like McKinsey's Whitney, I can't think of a horse dominating a race as important and as anticipated as a Whitney can be. That was a real statement effort, and I don't know if it's going to translate to a mile and a quarter in the Breeders' Cup, but it, as a standalone, it's a race that. You know, really should stand up historically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you win the Whitney, it's huge, and it's a race Bob Baffert really, really wanted to win. He really wanted to get that even though he's a Grade One winner, he wanted to get that signature win in that horse, and the Whitney is a signature win. And Baffert was so disappointed in the trip he had in the Met Mile. Where, you know, most people will tell you that he was the best horse in the race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just got, that was just a disastrous trip, and he just ran an incredible race to get second. Now, when they run like that in the Met Mile, and you look at some of his earlier victories, and again, you have to wonder if a mile and a quarter is his best distance. I know he ran a good race in the San Diego Handicap, but the truth is, you know, Giftbox is a good horse. You know, he's nothing exceptional. He's a very nice horse. But McKinsey could not get by him the whole length of the stretch, so it was a tough loss. But he's obviously a very talented horse, and you know if any horse can stretch out that far, he can. But my highlight of Whitney Day was hooking up with Bob and Jill and Bodie and introducing them to Theo and Bob was holding him, taking pictures, and so I got great shots of Theo with the Baffert family, and just with him and Bob holding him, and that was a lot of fun. So that was a highlight of that day. And I got to tell you though, you know, as impressive as McKinsey's win was, let's not forget about Yoshida. I mean, I thought Yoshida, you know, all things considered, ran a heck of a race. And he's a horse that you do have to pay close attention to going a mile and a quarter. I think he's just going to get better. He's already shown on several occasions that he wants to go a mile and a quarter. He ran a heck of a race in the Dubai World Cup. And another thing I have to mention, too, by the way, is that, you know, I normally don't like to, you know, criticize jockeys, but I got to tell you, Preservationist has to go down as having the worst ride of the meet that I've seen. I mean, that was just an absolute disastrous ride. I mean, to go four or five wide into the first turn and then make that ridiculous move to open up clear lead, open up two, three lengths in that race. And, you know, the horse was exhausted the stretch. He wouldn't change leads. And he showed in the Suburban he's a much, much, much better horse than that. I don't know if Jimmy Jerkins is going to going to bring him back into Woodward. But most likely, you probably wait for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But don't forget about that horse. He showed in the Suburban he's a very good horse. And to me, this race I just completely throw out. So I think the older horses are, I think they're starting to sort themselves out and starting to look like a pretty decent group. And I think we'll get some good horses coming out of the Pacific Classic. And of course, we still have Vino Rosso. And I got to tell you, the horse to watch also, one of the more impressive races I've seen at the meet so far was that allowance win by Hofberg coming back off a layoff. I thought that was a very classy win in good solid time, and the way he opened up and the way he was striding out and how professional he was. This is coming off a long layoff. This horse was always meant to be a top horse, and I think this was a really, really powerful first step back. So I think in the Woodward Stakes, we're going to see between Hofberg running against Catholic Boy, and we'll see if Vino Rosso comes back in that race. And, we'll see what they do with Thundersnow. It's funny that the morning of the Whitney come out the back gate, from Avian Rhoda's house, and Saeed Bin Sarur is there with somebody else from Godolphin. And the assistant trainer, and they're walking Thundersnow back and forth, and everything is fine. He's walking back and forth right behind their gate. So Saeed came over, and one thing about Saeed Bin Sarur, which I love, he always comes over. I can be like 50 yards away, he'll come over to say hello. Really nice guy. And he came over. We had a long talk about things and talking about Dubai and everything, and looking back and talking about Thundersnow, and he was in great spirits. And then the horse goes back to the barn, and boom, that's the next thing he's out of the race. He was just, like a half hour earlier, he's walking behind the house there, and then he's out. So I don't know if they're going to bring him back into Woodward or wait for the Gold Cup again, but, again, he's another horse you do not want to underestimate. This is a really, really good horse who's won or placed in group or grade one stakes in five different countries. People don't realize, he's a group one winner in France. He's run three huge races in this country, two Dubai World Cup victories. He's run well, and he ran well in the Irish 2000 Guineas. So, he's a very good horse. So, all the horses are really coming to hand right now. We'll see what Seeking the Soul does. And I think Pavel's got a big shot. Several up-and-coming horses in the Pacific Classic that I'm interested in. And I think we'll find out in the Travers how the three-year-olds stack up. I think we'll probably get some really top-class three-year-olds coming out of there that could be major players in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I think Classic's coming together very nicely. And it's been a strange year. You can actually say, you put the word arguably in there or not, but if you're ranking the top horses in the country right now, three of the top four horses, with the exclusion of McKenzie, are one male turf horse and two female turf horses. I mean, you can make a case for, obviously, Brick and Mortar is everybody's choice as the top horse in the country right now. You can certainly make a case for Sister Charlie being two or three with McKenzie. Sister Charlie, to me, is an absolute freak. I mean, she's just a winning machine. And then after what God Stormy did, you can very easily put her right up there. So, it's just, what a year. I was listening to Mark Cassie earlier. The funny thing is that Mark is looking, like every trainer is. Everybody wants to be elected into the Hall of Fame. And I think Mark might have been a little disappointed that he didn't get in. But boy, is he making a statement this year. if he doesn't get in now, to win two, he was missing a classic victories. He wins two classics with two different horses. He's got stakes horses coming out of everywhere. And now he's, got Stormy. Who knows? Could come up. He could have another Tep in there. He's got good 2-year-olds coming up. He's got stakes winners everywhere. So, he's certainly making a statement. I would be very surprised if he didn't get into the Hall of Fame next year. And here's a guy, by the way, you would think after he lost Norman, his son, you know, who's not only his top assistant, but, you know, in many ways he was a crutch. And, you know, Norm trained a lot of these horses himself while Mark was in Canada, and Norm had the horses at Churchill Downs, and, you know, he was doing a lot of the training. And it's tough to lose your top assistant, especially tough when he's your son. You know, I've seen it happen before. But, you know, these trainers, they bounce back. I saw the way Lucas bounced back when he lost Jeff. I saw how Dick Mandela bounced back when he lost Gary. You know, a lot of these trainers, you know, they have their sons and they depend on them. So it's, even when Pletcher was starting out, when he lost George Weaver and his wife Cindy, who was his top assistant and top exercise rider, and they just keep plugging along. So it's great to see Mark have this kind of success, you know, without Norm, who's a heck of a horseman himself.
No, and as we discussed with Mark today, after a couple of summers where, yeah, disappointing Saratogas, he's in the midst of a very, you know, a very robust Saratoga. Speaking, Steve, stay on the classic side of things and the handicap division. One race from, you know, the past week or so that I want to include was that allowance, that mile and an eighth allowance, which I think was last Thursday or Friday. Spinoff and Lone Sailor came together in that allowance, and Spinoff was very good. Got a low 90s buyer, 92 buyer, but I thought Spinoff looked good in that spot, and watch for him, I imagine, in the Woodward. No,
I well, you mean in the Travers? I mean, my current column on there is he's about the Triple Crown horses that you normally, by the time the Travers comes along, you're seeing all of these new faces come along, and the Triple Crown horses have not been making much of an impact. But how strong the Triple Crown horse, the impact that they have on the Travers this year, and what I've and I looked at all, you know, all my Derby dozens. And you look how highly I had Game Winner was number one for like 8 weeks, and then Tacitus was up to number three. I had Spinoff ranked number five, as high as number five. I've always been a huge fan of this horse. And for him to come, and he's had a strange career, you know. And in the Belmont Stakes, he was only finished sixth. He was only beaten three lengths in the Belmont Stakes. And then the grass dry, you know, forget about that. But to come back against older horses, and a horse like Lone Sailor, who's earned $1.2 million and is placed in, like, you know, 9 or 10 graded stakes, to come back and absolutely crush him. If you watch his gallop out, I've always thought this was a very talented horse. And if you look, you know, you got to figure Game Winner, Tacitus is going to get that. Maximum Security, I mean, I don't know why they haven't made a decision yet. I've always been under the belief that he would not run, but, you know, if you're going to withdraw him, you would have think they would have done it already. You know, the fact that you know, Gary Mary West already have, you know, a possible favorite in the race, they've already won the race, I thought that they would wait, but it seems like Jason Service is trying his best to get him to the race. I don't know what it's contingent on. You would know by now if you're going to run him or not. He's been at Mammoth. He didn't even bring him to Saratoga. So I thought for sure they were going to skip the race, but now I'm not so sure. But you look how he's going to get that, and Tax is going to get that. And I tell you, Spinoff could be a huge overlay in there. I mean, he could be a really nice price. And coming, he's got a race over the track at a mile and eighth against older horses. Boy, I tell you, don't forget about that horse at all. I totally agree with you on that.
Well, and I know that, you know, from the way the track plays, typically, I thought it was going to be tough. You know, Lone Sailor invariably, you know, it needs a setup. But like you said, I visually thought it was impressive, even if it
exactly.
didn't get a big number. But it is a 2 week turnaround. I mean, that's the.
That's very un-Fletcher-like. So I even mentioned that in my story. I said, I don't know if he's going to go, because catcher does not like to run a horse back 18 days. So if he does run back, then you know he bounced out of that race in great shape, because it's very, very unusual for Pletcher to run a horse back that quickly. You would think he definitely would wait for the Pennsylvania Derby. But, whether he's a true mile and a quarter horse, I don't know. You know, he's got all those good, all those Zaftigs and, who basically milers, but I think the pedigree's there. The way he runs, I don't see him having any problem getting a mile and a quarter. But again, the key will be whether Pletcher runs him back in 18 days. If he does, if he goes against the norm and runs him back, then you know that he feels he came out of the race in great shape and he's got a huge shot. And you know what? I'm glad he got it. I like the fact that he got a 92 buyer, because if he had gotten like a 105 buyer, then I don't think Pletcher would have run him back in a million years. I mean, that just would have been too much, too soon. And he would be eligible to bounce off a big number. But with a 92, he still got room for improvement to come off of that race.
The horse that is I sense by the time we get to next Saturday, the horse that I sense is going to be forgotten about, not completely forgotten, but the horse that is being kind of shunted down the list with each passing weekend, between the Curlin result and the two Chad Browns, looking at Bikinis and High Honors and Endorsed in between, and then the anticipation of Game Winner coming east, the horse that's being forgotten about is Code of Honor. And all he's done is
forgotten at the windows, so they'll bet him. Wyatt was powerful.
Wait a minute. How much can he be bet, actually, when the Chad Browns are going to take money, Baffert's going to take money, he can't be better than third choice.
Right. I figured he'd probably be third choice. Now, again, he's another horse that he's no guarantee he's going to love a mile and a quarter, but he's in such good shape right now. And I would actually root for that horse, because Theo actually fed him breakfast from his hand. Shug's son, who was
that's one of the most powerful angles in racing.
For me, it is. Hey, are you kidding? I was going personal angle first. Are you kidding? But we came over to see him, and he was a pussycat. And Shug's son, who was his assistant, came over. He had his feed, his mash and all his grain and everything. And he put some in Theo's hand. And Theo reached down. He ate out of his hand. So I
said,
"That's it. That's my Travers horse."
That's great.
I really believe, and Theo met him too, by the way. But I really think Tacitus is the way. If the blinkers help, and the funny thing is that I'm out there in the morning and I see Tacitus come out to train. He's wearing blinkers. So I see Bill and I go over to him. He says, we're just going to see, so he has a tendency to lose concentration. And then after he galloped, and the first thing Bill told me, he says, boy, he really looks sharp out there. And the minute he said that, I said, oh, he's wearing blinkers in the Travers, that's for sure. But if any horse deserves good luck, any kind of good luck, it's Tacitus, because he has had the most atrocious luck, even in the wood, which he won. But the three races after that, I mean, just... was he ever the best horse in the Belmont Stakes? Everything went wrong. White throughout the entire race, going a mile and a half, bumping pretty severely with War of Will, turning into the stretch and then lugging in, and he's still flying at the end. And then Jim Dandy, you can't have much worse trip than that. I mean, I thought he was going down. I mean, he looked like his nose kicked up dirt. He just how he recovered. And then, of course, he made the early move, which is a killer. Makes the early move, and winds up getting shuffled back again, which means that's it, he's dead. And he comes on again, which you never see a second run like that. And, looked like he was going to win the race at some point, in the stretch. He looked like he was going to come back and win the race. So, he's a very good horse who's much better than it looks on paper, because of the he had a terrible trip in the Derby. So if he gets a good trip, he's going to be very tough, especially if he if the blinkers help him focus a little bit better. But I find the Travers fascinating. And again, getting back to Code of Honor, forgetting about the Theo the Theo factor, he was a totally different horse in the Dwyer than I saw early in the year. Early in the year, he was a horse that was kind of green, really didn't know much what was going on. I think he really woke up in the Derby when he made that move on the inside and stuck his head in front and kept running in the stretch. I think he sort of woke up in that race. And then he put it all together in a Dwyer to come from last the way he did to make that run, split horses, and just absolutely... It wasn't a terrific field by any means, but visually, the way he did it. Now, again, it was in a mile, and if you look at his pedigree, he's got more of a mile to mile and an eighth pedigree, so he will have to... He might have to stretch out a little bit farther than he wants to go, but he's in such good shape right now. Personally, I'm not telling Shug McGee he had to train a horse by any means. But I thought for sure he'd run him back into Chim Dandy rather than go from a mile and wait, you know, 2 months to come back into Travers. But, yeah, again, I'm not going to question Shug. That's just what I thought he would do. But we'll see how it works out. But you mentioned another horse, by the way, that I don't know if he's quite ready to win the Travers, but a horse to watch for down the road is Endorsed. I mean, what he did in the Curling, you know, coming off a six furlong race, his two best, his two wins were at six furlongs, and I thought he hung in really, really gamely. You know, Chad Brown's horse, Highest Honors, is a really nice horse, but yeah, he finished well clear of the third horse in that race, and for him to stretch out to a mile and an eighth, you know, I thought it was a pretty good effort. You know, he's by Medaglia d'Oro out of a Tappet mare. He should like the distance, and he should only get better. He's only run four times. So, you know, he could, again, I don't know if he's quite ready to win the Travers, but he might make his presence felt, and I think he'll definitely make his presence felt after the Travers as he gets a little older. But, I mean, there's a lot of horses in this race you can make a case for. I mean, it's a very, and the key to the race is a maximum security runs. Because, you know, now you got a horse to dictate the pace. Because, again, we don't know what Global Campaign's going to do. But, you know, if neither one of those two horses run, there isn't a heck of a lot of speed in there. You know, if Chad runs looking at Bikini's back, then he definitely would be a pace factor in there. But, you know, listen, I didn't even mention Owendale and Laughing Fox. If he goes, he's
running.
A strong closer.
Well, and he really did not get the setup at all in the Jim Dandy the way things unfolded. And, you know, he ran evenly. People are going to look at that effort. And I actually watched the race a couple of rows behind the Lieblongs and said to Alex afterward, I said, you're going to get 10, 11 horses in the Travers. You should have at least you would have had the opportunity for a legitimate pace, and you know, then he might have more of a chance to, you know, to close run his race more to his style. Listen, no matter what, we've got it seems like a minimum of 10, and there's a couple that are on the, depending on what Maximum Security does, there's a couple on the side that I haven't really heard much. It wouldn't surprise me if Dallas Stewart runs back with Chess Chief, who ran a decent second in the West Virginia Derby.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a horse that most people never even heard of. You know, but his races are getting better, and he did run well. Not only did he run well in the West Virginia Derby, but he ran well enough against a horse who may turn out to be the best three-year-old in the country.
Well, Mr. Money, that nobody Money, talks about. Yeah, nobody appreciates at all.
Yeah, he's been totally ignored. You know, and he was 35-1 in that West Virginia Derby as well. And, you know, he didn't run badly in the Indiana Derby behind him. And he just seems to be a horse that's, you know, that's getting a little bit better. So, I don't know. I mean, again, he's an into mischief, so he would need help going a mile and a quarter. But you know, with Dallas Stewart, you just never know. And the thing is, getting back to Laughing Fox. From the time I started handicapping races, as far back as I can remember, people ask me what are your top handicapping angles? And one of my top handicapping angles are betting horses that are coming off even races, especially horses like Laughing Fox, who wants to come from far out of it and make one run. And when you see them running 3-4 lengths off the lead, and they're 3 lengths back, 4 lengths back, 3 lengths back, 4 lengths back, and they get beat 3-4 or 5 lengths or so, horses coming off even races, and then they go back to their style, could be very, very dangerous. I remember we used to have a contest at the racing forum called Broken Downs, and everybody would pick their horses in stakes races. And at the end of the year, you could win like thousands of dollars because whoever has the most money at the end of the year. But it was a whole year thing. And the first year they ran, it was the Tropical Park Derby, and there was a horse named Dr. Valeri, who was mostly a come from behind horse, but he had run evenly. Again, his start before that, four back, three back, four back, three back, four back, whatever. And I took a shot, and this is the first day of Broken Downs, and the horse paid $230, and I already had a $230 lead, and the weird thing is that I was in front and I led every day of the entire year and got beat on the last day. I always remember that, but I still always remember that because of the fact that that horse had run evenly in this race before. So I know I'm throwing a lot of horses at everybody, but Laughing Fox, he's bred to go a mile and a quarter. He's by Union Rags out of a Stormy Atlantic mare, and he's run some big races. I remember when I saw him break his maiden at Oakland early in the year when he overcame a severe speed bias to come from off the pace. And just got up and win, going a mile and a 16th, and then came back and did the same thing. Came back and won the one going away in an allowance race. And then he's been kind of, a little bit inconsistent since then, but on his best day, you never know. He didn't run badly in the Preakness. He only got beat 3 3/4 lengths in the Preakness, coming from 20 lengths out of it. He's 20 lengths out of it. He got beat 3 3/4 lengths. So, and one thing I wrote in my column is that if you look at the three Triple Crown races, the one race that has the most effect on the Travers, by far and away, is the Belmont Stakes. If you look at the Derby and the Preakness, they've each had like 4 winners come out of the Derby and Preakness to win the Travers. The Belmonts had 17 winners come out to win the Travers. And I think what it shows is, if you want to make something out of it, is that the Travers is more of a stamina test than the Derby or the Preakness. Now, Derby, again, the Derby is a lot of luck. And how many times you see the Derby won by horses that probably aren't true mile-and-a-quarter horses? Maybe they might catch a sloppy track or fast pace, or you get a War Emblem or something like that, some kind of horse like that. And, of course, the Preakness is a shorter race, which is more conducive to speed. But, obviously, the Belmont is the stamina race. 17 winners at the Belmont Stakes. And I'm going back to Whirlaway. Have come back and won the Travers. And if you look at, Saratoga, and if you look at, for years and years, the track record in the Travers was 201-3. We shared by Arts and Letters and Buckbasser and Jiper. They had the track record until it was broken. Honest Pleasure broke it, General Assembly broke it, and then Arrogate. I mean, that was absurd what he did to the track record. But I really think that the Travers is more of a test of stamina because of the fact that you don't find horses running 159 and change in the Travers. For years and years, the track record was 2 minutes. And before that, it was 201. And before that, it was 201-3, for a lot of years. So I think that's why the Belmont Stakes has had such a major impact on the Travers. So when you're handicapping the race, I think you want to look for horses with stamina.
Well, Steve showing great stamina here this morning. Steve, let me take...
in other words, I haven't shut my mouth. I'm making up for the two lost weeks.
Let's take a phone call because we've got let's see, Len calling from Sarah. Oh no, that was bad.
Uh oh.
No good.
All right. Try again.
Yep. Pick that up. Casey, yeah, you got to take that off air. Thank you. Was Steve still there?
I want to know if there was Lily Tomlin on the other end.
Yeah, exactly. We'll try to get Len calling from Saratoga. And
you got me.
There we go. There he is.
All the way from Saratoga. No wonder why it's a bad connection.
Exactly.
Before you get to Lenny, I have to ask you a question. I went on early, a couple of minutes early, and there was a song on, by the way, and I don't know where this song came from, if it was you or Casey, but there was the weirdest song about Bonnie and Clyde in a French version of it.
Well, sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
What is that?
It's Bonnie and Clyde. It was sung
by a Frenchman. It was a weird song.
Well, the song was done in French. It's Serge Gainsbourg and Brigitte Bardot. It's from the late 60s. It's awesome.
Oh, okay.
We played it.
Wait, what the heck?
Yeah, it's Bonnie and Clyde, and it's a poem. It's the French translation of a poem about Bonnie and Clyde, and it was a huge hit in like maybe 67 or 68. And well, there's
really?
that Serge Gainsborough and Brigitte Bardot had an album, and we played it. I had Casey play it when Christophe came on, and Christophe was blown away. He said, "Wow, I can't believe it! You're playing this. You got the biggest kick out of it." Although we tried it with Patrick Biancone, and Patrick couldn't have cared less.
Well, I was listening to it, and I said, "What in the world is this? This is one of the most unusual songs."
Oh, it's one. It's fabulous.
Jerry Lewis likes that song, also.
Lenny Shulman in town, everybody, and Lenny's got book signings galore. Let's get that out of the way, Lenny. Tell everybody where they can say hello to you the next few days, the next week, and get a copy of Justify, 111 Days to Triple Crown Glory.
Yes, it's the closest I'll get to being with Steve in the Hall of Fame. I'll be at the Hall of Fame Saturday morning. 9:30 to 11:30, signing copies of Justify there. So if you're in Saratoga, stop in. I think Jennifer Kelly's going to be signing her Sir Barton book. And the only thing lacking, Steve, is Steve Haskin, who wrote the foreword to every book that's been written in 2019. Steve Haskin will not be there signing his foreword. So
Brian asked me, and I said, "Nobody wants the person who wrote the foreword to sign a book. They want the author. Only author's name should be in there, not the foreword writer."
Steve makes
as brilliant as the foreword was. It shouldn't be there.
Steve makes more money writing forwards than he does writing on horse racing.
Yeah, right.
He's got a cottage industry.
Right. It's just weighing my wallet down.
He's the go-to guy for any forward. He doesn't even know what a forward is, but it's amazing.
So I even wrote a forward in the forwards.
Yeah. Yes, he was very forward with his forward. And then Monday, the 26th, I think it is, I'll be at North Shore Books signing copies of Justify from 5 to 6 p.m. So it's a huge tour of Saratoga. I'll be doing comedy at Chuckles. I think that's in Albany. So come by and see me there also. Steve, I have to tell you, it is It is incredibly great to have you back on the air again. And I think I speak for everybody in the industry. We all, as Jimmy Mitchell says, you don't know what you got till it's gone. And I just want to tell you how important you are to this entire industry and how thrilled we all are to have you back among us.
Well, that's very kind. I appreciate it. And I missed doing it just because it's my, as much as it's for some people, they say, you know, it's their touchstone to the business. I mean, for me, it's my day-to-day existence. So it was very tough to sit out, especially at this time of year. So
Right. And let me tell you something that happened to me yesterday. I'm walking out of the Price Chopper here in Saratoga with my buddy Mitch, and we're just talking nonsense, and I'm just telling, you know, I'm computer illiterate, so I'm just telling him, yeah, I'll upload your download to your upload to your down, you know, I'm just saying something stupid like that. A woman pushing a shopping cart in the parking lot turns around and says, "You're a horse racing guy. I recognize your voice from the Steve Bick Show." I kid you not. This is how dedicated your viewership is and your listenership. It blew me away, Steve, because I haven't done your show for 2 months. You know, and here's somebody who tunes in obviously every day. It was incredible.
Well, the Johnny D has got the greatest voice recognition story. He twice in elevators. He's opened his mouth in an elevator, once in Vegas, and once, I forget where the other place was, and he said, somebody in the elevator said, "Are you Johnny D?"
Well, he does have an incredibly distinctive voice. That is.
That's true, though. Your voice is your voice. You sound like every other schnook from Long Island.
New York, there's this woman turns around, "You're the horse racing guy." It was incredible. Just amazing. But I thought that is a statement about your fans. I thought it was just great. I really did.
I love it. That's your riot.
Yeah, you can't do a throwaway line in the parking lot of the Price Shop. It's incredible.
By the way, Lenny, I got a suggestion, by the way. If the book signing at Northshire is kind of slow, you know, you're only about two doors down from the Saratoga Deli. So all you got to do is have somebody bring you in a pastrami sandwich and a knish, and it'll make the time go faster.
If it's slow, I'll go get it myself.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's right down the alley, and I got to tell you, that place is really good.
See, this is the kind of information you need.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah,
that's very true. Actually, it's the Broadway Deli, and Avi Friedberg was nice enough to come out last week when Tina and I were really, we were kind of housebound, and she had to really kind of attend to me. And he came out. He brought a whole array of sandwiches and side dishes and knish from the Broadway Deli, and it hit the spot. I'll tell you, that was a nice pick me up. So that's
the potato knishes. They make everything right on the spot.
Yeah.
You know, they make it ahead of time. Hey, don't forget my Mrs. London's there.
That's right, Steve.
She hasn't left you yet?
Well, no, you're the second person to ask me that, actually, the second or third. There were a lot of people convinced that this was going to be the ultimate test of our longevity.
I told him she went from Derby Barbie to Nurse Ratchet.
So are you allowed out at the races, Steve?
I'm going to wait. I think I'm going to come on Saturday. I'm still, the more time I spend, you know, kind of sitting up and standing, the more tiring it is, and so I thought today and tomorrow get the show get rolling toward next week, toward Travers Week, and rest up a little bit more, and then I'll come Saturday for, you know, what should be just a great day. Steve, we didn't even talk about the Alabama, which I think until people sit down with the PPs, they're not going to realize what a nice race this is. really interesting. A lot of ways to go in here between Chad Brown and Ian Wilkes, Larry Jones, George Weaver. I mean, those are your four principals. But I thought that it came up very good. And keep an eye on Jaywalk, who's angling.
Yeah, Mammoth Oaks. She's back. And she's a short field, and she loves Mammoth. I don't see her losing that race.
No.
I think one of the fascinating things about the Alabama is that we'll find out how good Dunbar Road is and how possibly she compares to Guarana. It's pretty good when you have two fillies like that. You can run one and, you know, wait for the cotillion on the other. Just keep alternating, you know, coaching club, and then you win Alabama with the other. Or I should start with the Mother Goose. You just keep alternating major stakes. But Dunbar Road, I mean, she looked awfully good in the Mother Goose. But then again, Point of Honor looked awfully good running against Guarana. I don't know if he looked good running against Guarana, or Guarana just didn't quite run her race. So, we'll find out. But like you said, you know, Larry Jones' filly looks like she could be any kind.
Lenny, Alabama thoughts?
I agree with everything Steve just said. Now, I just took a quick look at it yesterday, and yeah, it's very wide open. Was my take on it, and I would actually not go for any short price in there. It seems like a race. I could be wrong. It seems like a race that favorites don't necessarily win. And I wouldn't talk anybody off anybody in there.
Yeah, the horse also that I mentioned four principals. I didn't include Lady Apple, which was unfair, and I didn't mention Brad Cox either with Ulele, who's done hasn't done much wrong really since the spring.
Yeah,
she could be a very interesting pace horse.
Yeah, and you know that's of course Everett Dobson's horse, who is now the president of every board that ever existed in horse racing. So he could be a very important guy, and this could be a very important filly for him. So,
well, and you mentioned important in certain arenas. We talked about McKinsey's win, and here's another summer win product. I hadn't really noticed.
Yeah.
In fact, that she had bred Ulele until just looking down and seeing summer win.
And interesting about summer win that a lot of people don't realize is now being managed by a guy named Bobby Spalding, who is one of the great fall managers in Kentucky and was in charge of Stonerside for all the years that the McNairs had it. And it, not only a great guy, but absolutely as good a farm manager as anybody. So that is only going to, you know, move summer wind up even more, along with the great bloodstock that Mrs. Lyon has, and and the great resources that she's able to put into the game. But you know, with Bobby Spalding there also, that you can bet that operation is just going to keep going on producing like that.
Well, and she's really one of the most warm and delightful people around the game, and you could see when McKinsey won, she was kind of a sidebar last week, and I'm just watching on TV, but you could see, you know, she watched it with Baffert, and she gave us a wonderful interview that's part of that best of that we do on the breeding. We've had that special with Watts Humphrey, Jane Lyon, and with John Gunther, and she was spectacular, and she's really enjoying a great run of success. And in fact, you look up and down this field, you know, this is a mile and a quarter, obviously. It's a classic distance for the fillies, and it's really the only opportunity of its kind. And everywhere you look, you got the Stone Street product, Champagne Anyone, Street Sense out of a Go Sapper mare, and Ian Wilkes has been involved with at least, what, Lady Joni won an Alabama. Steve, any others you can think of that Carl Nafsker beside Lady Joni?
He had that other filly. He had another filly that I think was that won the Alabama. I'm drawing a blank on her name.
Me too, but I think you're right.
Before Lady Joni, really good filly. Oh, shoot, what is her name?
Wow.
We'll come back to that.
You always have everything at your fingertips.
Can I just ask, isn't it refreshing, unless I've missed something here, that you mentioned McKenzie, who's now coming toward the end of the four-year-old of the year, and there's no Stallion deal that's in place, at least it's
I know.
Right? How different is that from what we're used to over the last couple of years?
Well, even Bricks and Mortar came up with a Stallion deal before before the million.
All of a sudden, Eugenio Colombo is speaking Italian on a Japanese Stallion deal. It's fantastic. But I find that very interesting. Of course, you know, Mike Pegram is Mike Pegram, always been a maverick. And I, who knows, maybe something's in place that just hasn't been announced. But I just think it's so awesome that a horse that, you know, normally would maybe have been whisked away already. You know, who knows that he may not come back next year again.
By the way, the filly I was thinking of was Banshee Breeze.
And I think Banshee Breeze would predate Ian's involvement, right?
No. Ian was there for Unbridled.
Okay. All right. So then,
Ian's been there forever.
I didn't realize. I would have thought 20. Well, that is 20 years, right? Because Banshee Breeze would have been.
Banshee Breeze was 98.
So just, that makes sense. Because that's right. Because Silver Bullet Day would be 99. Okay. All right. That makes sense. The golden era too.
Back to Mike Pegram.
Well, champagne anyone. There we go. It all comes together. This field. You know, if these were boys, I mean, next week we're going to be talking a mile and a quarter and the Travers. And Lenny will be with us, by the way, on TV the day after Travers, which has become a bit of a tradition. He'll be with Seth Merrow and I on Loose on the Lead to recap.
And hopefully you'll
Travers.
Be able to see my clothes very clearly that day. So that'll be
well,
a big thing
it is.
Me.
It is my left eye. So you'll be sitting to my left. So I won't be able to see you at all, which is perfect.
I'm going to wear my tux.
You look at this field, and up and down, there's a lot of classic pedigrees in here. I mean, Dunbar Road is by Quality Road out of a Bernardini mare. Miss Mary Apples was by Clever Trick, but she was a stake horse. This is Lady Apple by Curlin. Even a Fleet Destiny, the Uriah St. Louis challenger, is by Hard Spun. Then, as I mentioned, Champagne Anyone, Street Sense out of Lucevan, the Go Sacramento.
Street Sense trained by Carl Nafska.
Exactly. You got the Larry Jones Homebred, who is by Istan, out of a Street Cry Mare, Street Minstrel. I mean, up and down. Uleli is a Candy Ride, the Jane Lyon bred out of Princess Arabella. On and on. Curlin again out of Bernardini Mare Point of Honor. And then you got another Street Sense off top of Paul Papa, the Windstar bred out of the Include Mare. And then Kelsey's Cross, even. Pat Biancone shows up with an Anthony's Cross filly out of a Trippy Mare. Not exactly classic distance bred, but anyway, this is a really nice field.
Yeah, I think it should be an interesting race. Again, we don't know how good Dunbar Road is, if she towers over these or not. But
how does she
tower? A mile and a quarter, you got to figure Point of Honor has got to absolutely love the mile and a quarter. You know, between her race in the coaching club and her pedigree on top of that, and even her victory in the Black Eyed Susan, she looks like she's crying out for distance.
Well, it's Champagne Anyone for me, I think. My inclination now, is to lean there.
Not only that, Castellano, I mean, how many times has he won this race? I mean, Castellano's, I'm sure he's had to have won the Alabama, what, three times?
Yeah, in fact, there it is. Embellish the Lace for the Leblongs and Tony
Well, I know Dutrow. He won the Princess of Sylmar.
Princess of Sylmar, of course, for our man
and
Eddie Stanko. And Pine Island as well for Shug and
Pine Island,
the Fixes.
Right.
the ill-fated Pine Island. And, yeah, so three. Not as good as his record in the Travers, but pretty darn good. Well, this has always been one of my favorite races every year, going back to I had a very special day to go for Wand. I made a special trip to Saratoga that year to see her. Speaking of ill-fated.
On a brighter note, you have to, for hockey hunch players, you have to go for off-topic because Paul Pomp is a huge New York Rangers fan. So for any Rangers fans out there, you got to root for the Paul Pomp horse.
And Paul's involved today, I think, in the stake, actually. I think today.
And hockey is playing a huge role in horse racing these days. I don't know if people realize or not, between Eric Johnson winning the Schuylerville on opening day and Paul Reddins running Pavel in the Pacific Classic this Saturday, and just getting and Joel Quenneville, who's a horse owner, Vinny Viola, who's a franchise owner.
Eddie Olchek.
The two sports are really coming together and aligning, which I think is great. It's fantastic.
Well, Eric Johnson joined us early in the meet, and
he's really great.
Is so upbeat and is so involved. And of course, he turned around. Not only was he here for opening day Saratoga and had the win, then he went out to Del Mar and he won. In fact, I think he's won a couple. And
one with Bowie's Hero.
And another one too. Didn't he? Is he involved in Bow Recall?
I don't know.
I think he might be, but we had a terrific, really fun conversation.
But he's into breeding. He's got mares. Yep. He's pin hooks. He's into every aspect of it, and just loves it. And as the he's 31 years old in hockey. That's kind of like running as a 12-year-old in thoroughbred race. He's the oldest guy on the Avalanche, and because of that, he gets to set the TV to what he wants to watch before the games. And he's always got it on racing, and the other guys are like, "What are you doing here?" And he goes, "We're watching TV, boys. Sorry." He just tells great stories about it. Just loves it so much.
Positive, always a positive, and you bring this up, and it makes me think I had. Who else? Dennis Savard. When Rene Douglas and Private Zone was running wild. Denny Savard was involved in that in that group. We had a fun conversation with Denny.
Yeah,
that's going way back.
Not that far.
Tiekenen, the horse Tiekenen, is a hockey name. I mean, they're the. Paul Redham and Eric have a horse out in California now, and that named Toothless Wonder that's named after Eric, who's running out there now.
Well,
listen, what other sport has had a Kentucky Derby winner named after one of its players?
That's right.
Fair question. And there was also, now you got me thinking left and right here, about Barry Schwartz has done a bunch of, has had his share of hockey player, the nice sprinter.
Paul had Paul Pompa named the guy who got traded to Columbus, who used to be on the Rangers, named the horse after him.
And who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of the... Alan Iwinski, Alan trained for that group that Barry was involved in, too.
Dubinsky. There was a horse named Dubinsky.
Yeah. There wasn't, no. No, this was a stake. This was a stake horse.
No, I'm talking about Paul Pompa's name.
No, Pompa's was Dubinsky? Okay. Yeah. The listeners will come up with it. They always do. Well, fellas, I appreciate this, and Lenny, won't see you until the weekend, but give everybody the details again on your book signing.
Yeah, I'll be at the National Racing Museum and Hall of Fame on Union Ave, right across from the racetrack, this Saturday morning, 9:30 to 11:30. Come on out, and Thank you, and once again, we are just so thrilled to have Steve on back on the radio, and Vic as well.
Steve, hey, Steve
if you want to sign my name, go right ahead. You have my permission.
Exactly. It hurts me deeply that you will not be bringing your fame and others with you. So,
or my hall.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Tina to show up. Maybe she'll come over.
She would. There they are, fellas. Thanks, Steve Askin, Lenny Shulman, everybody. Let's take our last break of the morning. We'll come back. Rusty Arnold to close things out. I wanted to get Rusty on because Concrete Rose and, of course, the Saratoga Oaks win a week ago Friday and the rest of the successes that Rusty was very quietly authoring. He's having a tremendous summer. Rusty Arnold, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania Breds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com, using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Close out this Thursday, getting back into the swing of things. And it's never unusual when Rusty Arnold shows up at Saratoga or Keeneland, the premier meets, and tears things up. He is doing that again this summer, and he is now within a couple hundred thousand dollars in earnings of having his best year in the game. And you've been in the game a while, Rusty. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Steve, and welcome back, first of all. Glad
Thank
to be
you.
Back.
Thank
you. Yeah, I've been in a while, I think, because I started so young. But it's a long time.
Well, you're getting the hang of things pretty good.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about Concrete Rose, and I don't know if she scared them away or whatever, but it's just pretty astounding. And I think it's gotten lost a little bit, in the crush of Saratoga excitement and the Whitney and everything else that goes on. But her performance in the Oaks, the Saratoga Oaks, backing up the Belmont Oaks and setting herself up for a potential sweep of this new triple turf tiara.
Yeah, she is just she's just some special filly. She has matured into her three-year-old year, and as the year has gone, she appears to be getting better and better. And she's just been just a pleasure to have, and lucky she fell into my barn.
What has transpired going back to Churchill and subsequently? You know, you were so excited when she won, on the undercard at Churchill, and you said she ran to her works. But you know, she's now backed that up with two dominant performances. Was this her all along, or is it? As the maturity factor and distances and, you know, some other factors involved, talk about that.
Well, it's what you hope for when a filly trains as well as she had. I mean, last year we knew we had something. She won her first start, did 5.5, went on and won the race at Keeneland at 1/16. Didn't perform well in the Breeders' Cup. I think there are a lot of factors, and we put her away, and when she came back this year, just each race, even her first race back at Tampa, coming off the shelf, she had to run hard to win it, and she dug in and did it very, very gamely. And then since then, she just keeps each race. Actually, it impresses me. She's just gotten better and better, and I think it's just maturity with racing and finding what she wants to do. We really early on didn't know how far she wanted to go. She's getting the stamina, we think, off the dam side. Power scored mare, and she just keeps improving. And again, her last two have just been really dominant races.
Well, it sets you up to go back downstate and to sweep this series. Not that Chad Brown's horses haven't competed well in this series, but when it was instituted, everybody said, oh, Chad Brown will just sweep these races. But it just shows you that nobody should be afraid of any one barn or one horse, etc. What a great scenario. And for the Bromigan team, the Ashbrook team, it's got to be thrilling. I want to get them on, because this is such a it's been, you can tell how important it's been to them.
Yeah, it's a great story, because, you know, they own the filly, and with BB and Racing, and also Bo Bromigan picked the filly out with David and Gordo, the two of them picked her out in Timonium. So they're on both sides of it. Bo was on the selection side where he found her, he picked her out, he bought her, and now the family owns her, and it's the whole family, and it's a great story. But and Chad's got so many good turf fillies, and actually we are a little scared of him when he started out the year when he's looking at newspaper record. But some horses changed to three and mature, and I think we just have a filly that just came around and got lucky for the fact that this is a
first year they've had that series, and we've had the right horse for the first two legs of it.
Well, you've been winning with a nice assortment, Rusty, as well at Ellis and at Saratoga. Totally Boss won that Kentucky Downs turf sprint preview, and you, of course, had Leinster win the Troy and dominate, set a track record. Talk about the summer in general. You got maidens that are winning, Troubling Moon, My America, left and right. It's really been great in both sides of the operation.
Yeah, the summer has been very good. I'm very lucky. Backed by some very, very loyal people, and they're sending me some very, very nice horses right now. And Leinster has just turned out to be such a pleasure, because it just took a while for us, I guess, to find out what he wanted to do. And he tried different things. He tried short, long, dirt, and since he sprinted on the grass, he's just turned into a monster. I mean, all three of his sprints are all very, very good races, and hopefully he's got a future at that for some better ones. And Totally Boss showed hints of this last year as a three-year-old. He was good for a short period of time. He had some issues. We sent him home, but he'll send him home for the winter. And he's probably unlucky not to be undefeated as a four-year-old. He lost one race by nose, and all of his races have been good, fast races, and real excited about running those two horses back and winning your end at Kentucky Downs.
Outstanding. And, of course, Morticia comes back on Saturday in the Smart and Fancy. Her turn to rack up a stake win?
Well, you always hope that. She's doing great. She got kind of a tough trip in her last one, but that happens on turf racing. And
yep.
Sometimes you don't get the hole, and sometimes you do, and she didn't. And we're hoping that the trip goes a little bit better, but she's doing well. And we'd like to see her win. She doesn't have that many more races before she's going to go to the Broodmare Band, so you'd like to see her go out on a strong few races.
Well, and got to ask you about the first-time starter tomorrow. It came up with Cassie, that seventh race at Ellis tomorrow. Just shows you, Rusty, what's going on at the Pea Patch, because there's some heavy heads, and you're one of them. Sky Ray, the hard-spun colt, got a debut from the rail, though.
Yeah, he's a colt. He's a great, big, tall, rangy colt. Probably going to want more ground, but it's time to get going. And I think the other half of the entry is a lot more accomplished and looks a lot better. But we want to get going now. By the time we get to Churchill Keeneland, we'll probably get him on to two turns and thinks he has a future.
Well, you mentioned that I was more interested in the firster, but Verb, of course, he's got the advantage of having run and, has come close. He's had three thirds. So, the entry is 2-1 and either or, but Skyray probably,
Yeah, one of his thirds is a great stake, I think, though. So
yes, in the Bashford.
He's got the experience, great time for us as trainers are getting the babies to the races. We don't have them there as early as some of the people do, and ours are starting to come out now. We'll start to see what we have.
Absolutely, and the ones with experience are tearing it up as well. And in fact, you got another maiden opportunity on Saturday at Ellis. Mischievous Maud as well, a firster for the hills, and this is an Into Mischief filly. Could be any kind, no?
Yeah, she's probably a lot more prominent this early. She's got some speed. We're not going to have to wait on the two turns. She's shown quite a bit, and frankly, expect her to run pretty well.
Yeah, she comes in off a bullet as well. Rusty, congratulations on all the good things. Continued success into the fall.
Okay, Steve, thank you.
Always great. Rusty Arnold, everybody, and Concrete Rose, and much, much more, including this Mischievous Maud to look for on Saturday at Ellis. And Morticia Saturday at the Spa. And let's get Casey on the mic here. We got about a minute and a half or so, 2 minutes. Case. Everybody's hearing my voice for the first time in 2 weeks, but Casey's voice for the first time in ages.
Hey, Steve, I'm here.
Where are you?
I'm here.
No?
Can you hear me?
No Casey today? Tomorrow?
I'm here.
Casey tomorrow to start the show. I'll build it up. It's a cliffhanger. I want to thank Rusty and Mark Cassie, who bookended the conversations on the Horseman front, and Lenny and Steve as well. Debbie Easter. And I'm not hearing him. Deja, I can't hear him. So, yeah, we'll save that for tomorrow. That mic is not working. That's all right. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Feels great to be back. Thanks, everybody. Good luck today if you're playing. Weekend preview tomorrow. Big weekend preview. Jay Pridman, much, much more.